This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Proverbs. Today, Pastor Sandy will teach through the book of Proverbs, chapters 25 through 28.
You know, in so many arenas of life, a polite perseverance is the key. I read this past week where a radish seed takes 3 days to grow into a radish, while a wildflower seed takes 2 years to germinate, then 2 years to sprout, then another 2 years to flower. So, do you want to be an ugly radish? That can happen quick. Or do you want to be a beautiful wildflower? Then you need to persevere. Hey, two frogs fell into a can of cream, or so I've heard it told. The sides of the can were shiny and steep, and the cream was deep and cold. Oh, what's the use, croaked number one. 'Tis fate, no help's around. Goodbye, my friend. Goodbye, cruel world. And weeping still, he drowned. But number two, made of sterner stuff, dog paddled in surprise. All the while he wiped his creamy face and he dried his creamy eyes. I'll swim a while at least, he said, or so I've heard he said. It really wouldn't help the world if one more frog were dead. An hour or two he kicked and swam, and not once he stopped to mutter, but kicked and kicked and swam and kicked, then hopped out via butter. Persevere. Verse 16. Have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. That's great. In other words, don't OD on honey. You know, here's the lesson. Most everything in moderation is good. When we become gluttonous, when we go to the extreme, then we get into trouble. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. If you always show up at your neighbor's house around dinner time, he's going to get tired of you quick. Don't wear out your welcome, he's saying. When you notice your host has already brushed his teeth and changed into his pajamas, it's probably time for you to leave and go home. It's been said short-term visits make for long-term friends. Verse 18, a man who bears false witness, literally lies, against his neighbor is like a club, a sword, and a sharp arrow. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. In other words, it's eventually, confidence in an unfaithful man in a time, he's eventually going to let you down. You know that. It's only a matter of time. Just like a rotten tooth. You know, you can get by with a rotten tooth for a little while, but it's only a matter of time. You're going to have to deal with the problem. It's going to be painful. Like one who takes away a garment in cold weather, and like vinegar on soda is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. In other words, don't try to sugarcoat someone else's sorrow. You know, you hear that a lot. You know, someone's hurting and we come in with glib words and sort of callous cries. Oh, cheer up, man, cheer up. What's wrong with you? No, there's a time when we need to weep with those who weep. Verse 21, if your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For so you will heap coals of fire on his head and the Lord will reward you. In other words, be nice to your enemy while he's trying to be hostile to you, and it's like heaping hot coals on his head. You torture your enemy and you gain God's favor at the same time. Good deal. He says, the north wind brings forth rain, and a backbiting tongue, an angry countenance. Verse 24, it is better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Now, instead of fleeing to the housetop, some men choose to escape an obnoxious wife by going to their garage or their shop, or they just stay at the office after hours, or they like the bowling alley, or they get a boat and take up fishing, or they go to the golf course and play a round of golf. Hey, you know what, tonight, I'm just going to tell you the truth. Here it is. To her who has ears to hear, ladies, if your husband lives in the corner of the housetop or at the bowling alley or at the golf course or still at work, rather than pester him and complain to him that he's never home, You might want to ask yourself what you're doing to keep him away. Trust me, if he was appreciated and if he was respected at home, he would probably rush to be there. Now that's just telling it to you straight. A cold water to a weary soul, so is good news from a far country. Good news is like cold water on a hot summer day. I like that. You know, the word gospel means good news. And yet, why is it that we think of sharing Jesus with friends and strangers, we think of that and we think we'll be rejected. We just assume we'll be rejected, that we'll run into a wall, that we'll be resisted. I mean, think about it. What thirsty person is going to turn down a glass of cold water? And yet that's what the gospel is, he's saying. It's like a cold water to a weary soul. It's something people are looking for. It's something people desire. They're thirsty for the gospel. Once I was, I picked up a hitchhiker not far from where he wanted to go, and he was in my car. He was only in the car maybe 5 minutes, just long enough for me to explain to him the basic truths of salvation. And as he was getting out of the car, I asked him, I said, "Hey, how would you like to give your life to Jesus?" And he said, "Yeah, I think I would." And I had this idea, you know, this assumption that, you know, the gospel's just not that, doesn't just happen that way. You know, people resist it and then they work through it. And, you know, you can't possibly just be wanting a glass of cold water on a hot day. But so I'm thinking this is too easy. And so I'm thinking I must have left something out. And so I go back through it, you know, and then I ask him, I said, "Now, are you sure? Do you want to give your life to Jesus?" He says, "Yeah, I'd really like to." And I'm thinking, it just can't work this way. And so once again, I go through it and I explain it to him and I say, "Now, do you really want to give your life to Jesus?" And I'll never forget, the kid looks at me and he says, "Well, hell yeah." I said, well, enough said. Apparently you want to give your life to Jesus, man. I led him in a sinner's prayer and he came to know the Lord. It was great. He was ready. Hey, remember verse 25. You know, as cold water to a weary soul, so is good news from a far country. Jesus is just what your friends are looking for. Don't forget it. A righteous man who falters before the wicked is like a murky spring and a polluted well. You know, when we stumble, when we compromise our faith, we muddy the water for the non-Christians that are looking at our lives. You know, hypocrisy becomes a huge turnoff to an unbelieving world. It's not the gospel they're turned off to. That's good news. They're turned off to our hypocrisy. Verse 27, "It is not good to eat much honey, so to seek one's own glory is not glory." It's disgraceful for someone to live for their own fame, he's saying. Verse 28, "Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls." The man who lacks self-discipline, who cannot control himself, will be controlled by other people or other things. The enemy will just run wild over his life. Satan will ruin everything that's good and wholesome in this man. An undisciplined man has no protection against evil influences. He's like a crippled deer in the middle of a pack of bobcats. Chapter 26. "As snow in summer and rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool." Doesn't snow in the summertime. It just doesn't happen. Doesn't snow much in Georgia in July or August. Doesn't happen. And neither does a fool gain honor. He says, "Like a flitting sparrow, like a flying swallow, so a curse without cause shall not alight." You know, the occultist, the voodoo practitioner can curse the Christian until they're blue in the face, but the curse will not stick. It's powerless. It cannot land on a believer. God prevents it from coming to pass. God protects his children from these satanic curses. I remember that every time I go down to Haiti. You know, that's a very real threat. "But like a flitting sparrow, like a flying swallow, so a curse without cause shall not alight." He says, "A whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the fool's back." You can't reason with a fool. They learn the hard way. They have to be punished. He says, do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. In other words, there's a right way and a wrong way to answer a fool. Avoid getting into it with him. Avoid the circular reasonings and the silly and the hypothetical arguments. You know, when you're arguing with the fool, don't deal with the abstract. Get practical, stay biblical, and then you'll expose his foolishness. But if you get into it with him on his terms, then it just go round and round and round. You remember the Pharisees when they came to Jesus in the temple? You know, they tried to trick him with all kinds of hypothetical questions. And Jesus kept bringing them back to Scripture. He answered them with Scripture. That's how you answer a fool. Verse 6, he who sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. When you send out a representative, make sure he's not a fool. You don't want to be represented by a fool. You let that happen, you shoot yourself in the foot. You undermine your own message. He says, like the legs of the lame that hang limp is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Nobody will listen to a wise word that's spoken from the lips of a fool. You know, it can be wise, but if it's spoken by a fool, you know, it's a message with no legs in a sense. It doesn't go anywhere. Nobody listens to it. It just lays limp. Like one who binds a stone in a sling is he who gives honor to a fool. Like a thorn that goes into the hand of a drunkard is a proverb in the mouth of fools. The great God who formed everything gives the fool his hire and the transgressor his wages. As a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. You recognize that verse? It gets quoted in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 22. The person who repents and comes to Jesus and then goes back to his sinful ways later on, like the dog returning to his vomit. Verse 12, do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Oh boy, you know, a wise man who only sees himself through his own eyes, from his own perspective, is worse off than a foolish man. Do you have some objectivity in your life? Do you see yourself for who you are? I mean, warts and all. Are you honest with your frailties and your mistakes and your weaknesses? If not, get married. Or wise up, one of the two. We shouldn't be foolish, and we should learn to see ourselves objectively. Verse 13, the lazy man says, there is a lion in the road. A fierce lion is in the streets. I can't go to work this morning. I need to sleep in. There's no lion in the street. You're lying, man. You're just lazy. You're just looking for excuses not to go to work. That's a lazy man. As a door turns on its hinges, so does the lazy man on his bed. I think I've got a picture for this. I mean, she hears the alarm and she just rolls over like a door turning on its hinges. The lazy man buries his hand in the bowl. It wearies him to bring it back to his mouth. This is so funny to me. And he's got a bowl full of food, but he's hungry because he's too lazy to pick up the spoon and bring the food to his mouth. The lazy man is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. He's so proud he thinks he knows more than seven men. Verse 17 is a great verse. Pay attention to this verse. It'll save you a lot of trouble. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a dog by the ears. That's a great proverb. I'll never forget one night I was driving down Memorial Drive. It was around about 5 o'clock. It was rush hour. And I was driving down Memorial Drive, and right, you know, in front of Provino's there on Memorial Drive, I saw this man. He was in the front seat with this woman, and he was beating this woman in the front seat of his car. I mean, he was just wailing on her. She was the passenger in the car. She was trying to get out. The door had swung open, and she was kind of hanging out, and he was just, you know, with his fist, you know, just pounding on this poor gal. Well, I pulled over and jumped out of the car and ran up to him and started yelling at him, you know, to stop. And before long, another group of guys, a whole group of us were out there. We were yelling at this guy, trying to get him to stop. And finally, we got him distracted enough so that the girl, she could leave. She could escape. But I'll never forget what happened next. We're standing there and we're trying to settle this guy down when all of a sudden the girl appears out of nowhere and she just wails him. She cold cocks him with her purse. And she just comes right over the back of the guys that are trying to restrain this guy. And she comes right over the back and she just right across the face with her purse, just decks him. My, oh my. We tried to give you a way of escape. Now you're coming back and you got the leverage on him. And so you're punching on him and all. And it just started all over again. Thankfully, by then the police showed up. It was crazy. But I think of that story when I read this verse. I'm not saying you shouldn't get involved in those kinds of squabbles, but just be careful. Because sometimes when you get into in between two fighting people, it's like grabbing a pit bull by the ears, man. You're gonna be in the middle of the fray. He says, like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and then says, I was only joking. How many people you know fit this? You know, renaming a hurtful statement, calling it a joke, doesn't negate the damage that it does. Just because I call it a joke doesn't make it funny. Verse 20, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no talebearer or gossip, strife ceases. A charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. Get rid of the gossip and you'll get rid of the problem. Gossip is like the lighter fluid. He starts the trouble. And trust me, he can burn down a church if you let him. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, Dunkin' Donuts, in other words, Krispy Kremes. And they go down into the inmost body. Krispy Kremes do that too. Fervent lips with a wicked heart are like earthenware covered with silver dross. Now here's what he's saying. Smooth talk from an evil heart is like a paper plate painted silver. In other words, it's a cover-up. You can cover up wicked intentions with smooth, carefully chosen words. He who hates disguises it with his lips. You know, it's like the lady who comes up, oh, bless your little heart. You ever heard that expression? Bless your heart. You know, that can mean anything. From I hate you to have a good day to, well, bless your little heart. I can't stand you. It can mean anything. That's what he's saying here. He who hates disguises it with his lips. That's all you have to do. Well, bless his heart. And lays up deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him. For there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it. And he who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him. A lying tongue hates those who are crushed by it, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Beware of the person who can't hold his tongue. Chapter 27. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. This was James's inspiration in James chapter 4. You know, James tells us not to be so sure of our plans. He writes, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. Don't boast about tomorrow. No one is guaranteed tomorrow. Life is full of the unexpected. I remember reading the story about Billy Graham. In 1962, Billy Graham woke up in a Seattle hotel room with a strange burden on his heart to pray for Marilyn Monroe and for her salvation. In fact, the next day, he had one of his aides call her agent and ask to arrange a meeting. Well, Billy Graham was told that it would take at least 2 weeks to set things up. And yet, 2 weeks later, the world was shocked by the news of Marilyn Monroe's suicide. The opportunity never came. Don't boast in tomorrow. It may not come. Marvin did the schedule. He showed me the schedule for the worship team until December. He worked out the schedule all the way to December. He said, Pastor Sandy, what do you think about the schedule? I worked it out all the way to December. I said, Marvin, I never like to work out schedules like that. Half the people could be dead by December. I mean, it's true. This is why Paul writes to the church at Corinth in 2 Corinthians 6, verse 2, Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. There are no guarantees that any of us will be around tomorrow. Hey, by the way, did you hear about the meeting that the devil had with his demons? I mean, too many people were becoming Christians. This had to be stopped. One of the demons, he suggested that they tell everybody that the Bible couldn't be trusted. The devil replied, he said, no, there's too much evidence to the contrary. Nobody will believe that. Another demon, he said, well, let's tell them that there's no heaven or hell. The devil said, no, that'll never work. The finality of life is ingrained in the heart of every man. Finally, one of the demons spoke up and said, hey, let's just tell them there's no hurry. And it sounded good. And that's become Satan's strategy ever since. Just put it off till tomorrow. There's no hurry. The Bible warns us, none of us are promised tomorrow. He says, let another man praise you and not your own mouth. That's good. A stranger and not your own lips. A stone is heavy and sand is weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than both of them. Wrath is cruel and anger a torrent, but who is able to stand before jealousy? Often rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. Think about that one for a while. A rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. If you love someone, don't just assume that he knows. Tell that person. Verse 6, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. True friends are going to tell you the truth, even if it hurts. He or she is willing to risk your feelings in order to spare you a serious mistake. I got to admit, I don't know that I have many friends like that. But boy, those are your true friends that are willing to tell you the truth. The faithful are the wounds of a friend. He says, a satisfied soul loathes the honeycomb, but a hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. A man who's full is able to be selective. He might even turn down some sweets. But a hungry person eats whatever is available. You know, here's a profound spiritual lesson in this proverb. Fill up on the joy and the peace and the goodness of God, and it's easier to say no to the sweet things of this world. It's the empty person who becomes vulnerable to sinful temptation. The hungry person. If you're hungry, you tend to want to fill up on anything. If you're full with the love of Jesus, you can say no to the things of this world. Like a bird that wanders from its nest is a man who wanders from his place. Remember 1 Corinthians 7. There Paul tells us to remain where we've been called. When we wander away from our marriage or from our job or from our church or from our calling, wherever God has called us, if we wander from that place, inevitably we get ourselves into trouble. He says, ointment and perfume delight the heart, and the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, nor go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor nearby than a brother far away. Isn't that the truth? You know, even in the age of Facebook, I mean, there's something to be said for physical contact and physical proximity. It's vital in friendships.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies. Constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.